Brady Saar, and I'm a sales agronomist for CHS Ag Services, Erskine. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network, CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Friday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Tyler Donaldson along with Jamie Dickerman. Snow will move into the southern part of the region this afternoon and continue through the evening, with the heaviest snowfall expected in southeast North Dakota and northeast South Dakota. Totals range from 2 to 3 inches in southeast North Dakota and 3 to 5 inches in northeast South Dakota. The snow will linger overnight and shift east into Lakes Country tomorrow before tapering off by mid-afternoon. Temperatures will stay cold through the weekend, with lows in the low teens and highs in the upper teens to low 20s tomorrow. Even colder air arrives Sunday and Monday, bringing single-digit lows Sunday and the season's first sub-zero temperatures on Monday.
A series of weather systems moving across the northern plains today. Bismarck National Weather Service meteorologist Jeff Savidel says some areas are under a winter weather advisory until tomorrow morning.
Now we're looking at snow has been spreading across mainly the western and southwestern part of the state, and it's kind of creeping eastward. So right now we're expecting the highest snowfall totals to kind of be in that area from west central through southeastern part of North Dakota. Much of that area is under a winter weather advisory through tomorrow morning.
The worst area is expected to get anywhere from 3 to 6 inches.
Looking for in that 3 to 6 inch range. The amounts kind of drop off pretty quickly the farther north and east you go. But the advisory area is generally around, 3 to 6 inches. There could be some localized areas that exceed that. But after this system moves through, should dry out a bit, and then looking for, much colder temperatures to continue. So it'll be basically colder and drier following the system.
World Weather Incorporated reports that in Brazil, northern areas will see frequent rain over the next 2 weeks, boosting soil moisture for developing crops but slowing some field work. Central and southern Brazil, along with Paraguay, will get a mix of sun and showers, keeping conditions favorable for corn and soybean growth. In Argentina, weekend rain will benefit crops where soil moisture has been low. Northwestern areas may still see heat stress until rain arrives. Most of the country will receive 3/4 to over 2 inches of rain through Sunday, supporting corn, wheat, and soybean development.
Brazilian soybean farmers on track to harvest a record 178.1 million metric tons in the 25-26 season. That's according to agribusiness consultancy AgroConsult, with planted area expected to rise 2.1%. Expansion coming mainly from converting pasture land to soybean fields. Meanwhile, China has halted imports from 5 Brazilian plants, including Cargill, over sanitation concerns after wheat grains treated with pesticides were found in shipments. In Argentina, the 25-26 wheat harvest is projected at a record 25.5 million tons. That's up from 24 million, as yields exceed expectations in central areas. The Brazilian corn forecast at 138.6 million metric tons. That's down slightly on drought concerns in the south.
Ag Bull trading owner Tommy Grisafi says the grains market's getting some outside market support to close out the holiday week.
A lot of cold weather in the Midwest going to keep things moving. A lot of people just finally got done with harvest, got this crop packed away. I doubt they just want to go out and get rid of it. So we're going to need to see some basis appreciation or higher prices here to loosen up the crop. And with that, we're seeing some incredible strength in some of the outside markets, so that's probably helping give a little bit of a risk-on flavor here as we enter the end of the month, which I think most people are forgetting about just because it's so quiet today.
Cattle markets trading sharply higher here, recovering earlier in the week losses.
Yeah, the markets are catching up to where they are priced in the cash market. The futures definitely had that debacle of a sell-off, which caught people, and then that final news of the Tyson plant shutting down. But with that, we're getting a friendly response here in the markets. It was an extremely thin trade, but nonetheless, we're not quite closed yet, but several of the months, top 4 months I look at it, feeders are locked limit and trading limit, live cattle very firm also.
Corn futures climbed to their highest level since early June as U.S. export demand strengthened. The latest USDA data showing exporters sold nearly 274,000 metric tons of corn to unknown buyers for 25-26 delivery, along with 312,000 tons of soybeans sold to China. The agency reporting strong corn export sales during the week ending October 16th, including 2.8 million tons for 25 to 26, and analysts say the numbers exceeded expectations even as the USDA continues to catch up from the federal shutdown.
USDA is preparing to deliver the final round of assistance under the Supplemental Disaster Relief Program. USDA Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation Richard Fordyce says this last phase will reach producers who still have unmet losses after previous aid rounds.
The Supplemental Disaster Relief Program is kind of the final piece in the $30 billion appropriation that we got through the act that was passed by Congress in December of 2024. And folks will remember the economic aid that was the first piece that was rolled out. That was around $10 billion. And then the Supplemental Disaster Relief in the first stage was the next thing in July. And now this is the final piece. And so what we hope to pick up with this final piece of disaster relief are folks that were either underinsured, not insured, folks that experience quality losses across all kinds of different crops.
Fordyce also addressed speculation about future program design as USDA evaluates next steps.
I've been a part of those discussions, the Secretary, the White House, the Chief Economist's Office, you know, talking about what would something look like. And, you know, no decisions made yet at this point. But I will say that with that partnership with the Chief Economist's Office at USDA, whatever happens will be done through an informed decision based on data, based on where we are at that point in time, and assist folks growing specifically to a commodity. But where we are at that point in time,
Fordyce says USDA expects payment processing and program implementation to move quickly as agencies work through backlogs from the government shutdown. For more information from the Red River Farm Network, visit Facebook and X. You can also find stories, podcasts, and more at rrfn.com. You're listening to the Red River Farm Network.
Farm news on the Red River Farm Network. RCIS says crop insurance continues to play a critical role as farmers navigate another year of uncertainty. RCIS Vice President of Claims for the Western Region, Tim Lear, says their focus remains on helping farmers recover quickly when disaster hits.
That's what RCIS prides itself on, is taking care of our farmers and ranchers out there. When disaster strikes, they need to know that they're partnered with somebody that's going to go out there, talk to them with empathy, understand what they're going through, and really try to make them as whole as possible throughout a tough time.
Lear explains how RCIS uses communication tools and technology to keep claims moving efficiently.
We use a variety of methods. One of them is we actually send out text messages on top of calling our insureds. That way they have a record of who their adjuster is, making sure that they can stay in contact as things change out there. And then we walk them through the process, depending on if it's a production loss or maybe it's a hail claim, what have you. We want to walk through them step by step. And a lot of that actually has to do with technology, bringing technology into the fold. So we utilize drones, satellites, what have you, so we can get a nice overview of what that damage did, how widespread of an area it affected, and make sure that we're taking everything into account when we try to make that producer whole.
USDA is highlighting the importance of a new sterile fly dispersal facility in northern Mexico aimed at strengthening the response to New World screwworm. Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs Dudley Hoskins says the facility in Tampico will significantly expand aerial treatment coverage.
What that facility will do will help us facilitate aerial dispersal of sterile flies in a greater range across Mexico, including up to as far north as Nuevo León.
Hoskins says recent detections in Mexico underscore why rapid response capacity is essential, adding that while those cases are no longer active, the new facility will improve access to difficult areas.
What this facility at Tampico will do will let us get to those hotspots more directly and quickly, especially in those areas that may be harder for personnel or vehicles to access.
USDA continues coordinating with Mexican partners to strengthen surveillance and prevention efforts across the region.
Momentum is building on year-round E15 as policymakers look for market-building solutions that support both farmers and consumers. Growth Energy Senior Director of Government Affairs John Fuhrer says demand-building policies like year-round E15 are gaining traction in Washington.
Policymakers are looking for solutions that build markets, right? They want to find more ways to get corn into the marketplace. They want to find more ways to build up that price, and this is a really good fit for that. And frankly, it's one that's no cost to the taxpayer, and it's long-term, and it actually builds out a market much in the way we've heard the president wants to do. He wants to build domestic markets. We've heard lawmakers say they want to build domestic markets. This is a really good fit for that.
Fuhrer says recent experience in shifting political dynamics suggests the current administration may be more open to making year-round E15 permanent.
You know, if we're looking at what could be possible going into next year, you know, this is a really good place to park this. I think there is some recognition on the oil side. This is a good thing for consumers. This is a good thing for farmers. There's no real reason to do this other than you want to hold it hostage for some other things that might be important to you. You know, I think the petroleum industry, they see this as a tit for tat in some ways. On one hand, we would like to get some more access for E15. They have things that they would like to do that they believe are better for their interests. And I think it's finding that right mix of what does it take to get enough people over the hump to get this done, to get E15 done.
Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins says USDA will purchase up to $30 million in fresh fruit for distribution to food banks and nutrition programs nationwide. The purchases, made through the Section 32 authority, aim to support growers facing surplus supplies while directing healthy options to communities in need. USDA's Agricultural Marketing Service will buy $15 million in fresh oranges, $10 million in grapefruit, and $5 million in mandarins. The agency routinely purchases a range of U.S.-grown products to assist both producers and nutrition assistance efforts.
More than 270 dairy industry leaders met for the 2025 Dairy Sustainability Alliance fall meeting, emphasizing that progress on sustainability accelerates when the entire value chain works together. The event highlighted the 2023 to 2024 U.S. Dairy Sustainability Report, which tracks advancements in well-being, environmental stewardship, and animal and community care. The report also offered the industry's first five-year update towards its 2050 environmental goals, outlining measurable progress from farms through processing and distribution. This is the Red River Farm Network. Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network, and on Fridays we're joined by the staff of Ag Week to take a look at what's on the cover of next week's Ag Week magazine, and we're joined now by news editor Michael Johnson.
In this week's Ag Week cover story, we look at what goes on after the busy agritourism season is over. For many of those in agritourism, November marks the end of pumpkin patches, apple picking, corn mazes, and more that were just at their peak. So many of those folks that have been inviting the public out to their farms are now planning for the next year. I visited the Agritourism Exchange in Brewton, Minnesota this month, and I saw a large crowd of farmers involved in direct sales, education, entertainment, and more. This event was hosted by the University of Minnesota Extension and Minnesota Farmers Union. The farmers there shared a lot of great ideas and enjoyed some artisan cheeses out at Redhead Creamery. And my story talks about some of the things the agritourism industry is dealing with, including on-farm safety. I spoke with an insurance company about what you should consider for liability insurance to protect your farm in case of an accident. I also got to hear the dreams of some of those farmers for how they're innovating and finding new ways to bring non-farmers on the farm to learn about what a bright spot agriculture is and all that it has to offer. You can find out more from these agribusinesses and why agritourism is booming right now in this week's print edition of Ag Week, online at agweek.com, or check out some more of the conversations in this week's Ag Week TV show.
News editor Michael Johnson from Ag Week joining us with a look at what's on the cover of next week's Ag Week.
Checking closing numbers, March wheat, Minneapolis closed half a cent higher, closing at 578. Chicago March wheat, 2 cents lower, closing 538.5. KC hard red winter wheat down 2 cents as well, closing at 528 even. December corn 3.5 higher to close 435.25. January soybeans 5.75 up to 1137.25 at the close. January canola in Winnipeg closing are still 40 cents per metric ton higher, 652 Canadian. This is the Red River Farm Network.